The U.S. continues its offensive in Iran. Another key military leader is taken out, while the puzzle of the Strait of Hormuz lingers. The debate continues hot and heavy about the Tennessee woman wrongly jailed in Fargo. Local law enforcement leaders say there is more to this story than meets the eye, however. And President Trump's second year continues to be tricky in the economy. The latest body blow coming this morning. Good morning, my friend. Great to be with you here on this sunny morning in Fargo, North Dakota. Hope you are doing well wherever you are at today. This is the Steve Hallstrom Show. Yours truly, the host of the program here for the next couple of hours. Addison Lugier, our producer, and kind of all hands on deck guy doing the real work today so I can have fun hanging out with you here on the program today. I have to admit to you, I'm a little sleepy this morning. I was watching the late game last night, I guess I'll call it the play-in game for the NCAA basketball tournament with Texas and North Carolina State. And after that was done, I picked up my phone, caught up on a couple late emails, texts, some social media stuff that I was kind of keeping my eye on for the morning show. All of a sudden, I look up, and here on True TV, they are playing the movie Hoosiers. And I knew right then and there that I was in trouble. It's kind of like, for me, I'm not a big movie guy, but there are certain things when they come on, certain movies when they come on, I have no resistance at all. In this group of movies would be Hoosiers, which I believe is the greatest movie ever made. I'm a basketball nut, so what can I tell you? Shawshank Redemption would be in this group of movies as well. Pretty much any of the Fast and Furious movies. I don't know. I know. It's the 16-year-old in me, I guess. Remember, the Titans would also be on that list, probably. As you can tell, I'm a sports nut. And there's probably a couple others, but those are the ones. When they come on, I immediately start doing some mental gymnastics about, okay, I got to be up tomorrow at 6:30. How much sleep do I really need before I turn the TV off? And I will have to say that generally I am pretty disciplined. I turn the TV off at 1:30 in the morning, and there was still about a half hour left to go. They were still going to go play, who was it, South Bend Central, I think, in the state championship game. But I've seen the movie. It's not that I need to know how it ends. I know that. But I just love that movie. I love everything about that movie. And I said, okay, yeah, I'm going to pay for this in the morning. I don't know. I saw how much sleep I got. I have no idea. But I did get up at 6:30 or so. So it's early in the day, and I grabbed a couple of donuts this morning. So I'm high on sugar and some liquid IV. So I think that'll power me through here this morning. It's such a great time of year if you are a basketball fan. It's such a great time of year if you love the sport of college hoops. I want to talk a little bit about this later in the show today. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on sports here, but the days of that 12 or 13 seed making a magic run to the Elite Eight or maybe even the Final Four, they're just not here anymore. NIL and the transfer portal has changed all that. You're going to get ones and twos pretty much like we did last year, most years. But there's still something magical about this tournament. This year, the Bison get to play. And don't get me started about the women being left off of their tournament. What a joke that whole thing is. All right, so let's get to it here with our morning wire. These are some of the things I think that you should know about as we get started here on this beautiful Wednesday. March 18th, 2026, the Minnesota State High School Girls Softball Tournament was still won by a guy, and we are here to remind you of that every so often. On the program, we will not stop until there is a new champion, and we're only a couple months away from that. Thank goodness. Hopefully some sanity can be restored to Minnesota high school sports. But in the morning wire today, the almanac tells me that on this day in 2012, we had another record high temp in Fargo. The last 2 days, record highs came in 2012, 76 and 76 today, 78. I don't remember 2012 all that clearly, but I must have loved it. We had mid to upper 70s three straight days. On this day in 1923, 19 below was the record low temperature. Average high is 37 in Fargo. Average low, 19. Sunrise this morning, 7:33, sunset at 7:37. We'll gain 3 minutes and 22 seconds of daylight today. Yes, it's light out. The glow in the sky well after 8 o'clock. Love this time of year. Don't love what I'm seeing in the markets today. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 280. S&P 500 down 25, NASDAQ down 68. We had a bad inflation reading come in today. We'll talk about that today here on the show. But that's got traders spooked that we may have a tough 2026. WTI crude oil price, this doesn't help either. Up another 270 a barrel to 98.90. Yeah, we're crowding 100 again on crude oil prices. Gold down $129 an ounce today, $4,878. We're under $5,000 again on gold. Silver down about 3% today at $77.59. Bitcoin down a couple grand as well, $72,000 right on the nose. AAA says average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas, whether you want to know it or not, $3.84. We're up again. California, by the way, is over $5.50 a gallon now on regular unleaded gas. North Dakota average price $3.31, South Dakota $3.33, Minnesota $3.43. And diesel fuel today over $5 a gallon at $5.06. Bah, not much to love there. So let's see if the news cycle can give us anything pleasant. Not sure I got much for you here either. Let's update the war in Iran. Al Jazeera reports that the Israeli military has confirmed that it has killed Iran's Minister of Intelligence. It's the third high-profile takeout in Iran within a 48-hour window, this following the death of acting leader Ali Larijani yesterday. They are trying to take off the head of the snake. Unfortunately, that snake has many heads, and you got to keep working at it. So that's what they continue to do. This is going to get really interesting for the president, by the way. The war will be less popular as days go by, and certainly if we keep getting PPI readings and gas or oil at $100 a barrel, it won't be too long before the pressure is really going to turn upon the president. Also in the news today, here's a story I had to read twice. The Bismarck Tribune reports that the North Dakota Democrat Party officially out-fundraised the Republicans in 2025. Yes. Outraised financially the North Dakota Republican Party. The GOP typically, according to the Bismarck Tribune, typically dominates fundraising in the state, but the Dem NPL reported higher individual donor contributions. I also want to know if there's big money coming in from somewhere. I'm always going to be curious about that. We can give you, there's a lot of little nuggets about the Angela Lipp story. Remember we were kind of joking about the Maryland dad story? Like they made this guy who was a criminal seem like, oh, he's just a dad from Maryland. I'm not saying it that way, but this is the Tennessee grandma story, I've decided to call this. So R. Scott Hennen had an interview with Fargo Police Chief Dave Zabolski yesterday, breaking his silence about this whole investigation. Zabolski firmly believes no mistakes were made in how the department handled the internal probe. And this follows Monday's City Commission executive session where attorneys discuss a possible lawsuit from Lipps. Lipps has confirmed that she's hired local Fargo attorneys to investigate and pursue civil rights legal claims. And I should check. Addison, will you check on the GoFundMe for Angela Lipps? See where that's at if they've got to their $40,000 goal. Cass County Sheriff Jesse Johnner also made public comments yesterday for the first time on the Jay Thomas Show, defending inmate release protocols. Johnner says, we've been criticized for basically shoving this woman out the door into the middle of the North Dakota winter, and we did nothing of the sort, and has had a lot to say about that. We're going to get into that more coming up later in the hour. The forum reports today that Clay County, Minnesota, saw a notable increase in handgun carry permits last year. They processed over 1,200 new or renewal applications. That's up 15% from the year before. Experts and analysts who look at this story say people are spooked about what might happen with guns in Minnesota. As you know, they're trying to outlaw certain kinds of guns in Minnesota right now. Morehead City Council says we need a comprehensive mosquito control policy for the upcoming year. Yes, there's always a lot of controversy about how Morehead is going to spray or not for mosquitoes. Meanwhile, Star Tribune reports that the Minnesota Department of Ag has announced plans for a large-scale aerial spraying campaign in many places across the state to stave off a massive spongy moth invasion. Treatment is slated for about 100,000 acres across eastern and central Minnesota to protect the state's timber industry. How about that? We're spraying for the moths as well. When we come back, story of the day, why the PPI report from today matters more than most. Coming to you live from the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com. That's the website for Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. They'll bring the oil change to you. And if you need a service visit, they'll have someone come up and get the car, bring it down there, do the work, bring it back when they're done. They make it easy in every possible way. Drivewithvision.com. That's Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. All right, I want to get into something that I saw this morning that most people are going to just sort of say, oh, whatever, who cares? I'm going to tell you why you should care about today's producer price index report. Now, I will begin this with a disclaimer that it is just one data point, one moment in time, and if we've learned anything from a government reporting numbers, we have learned that you cannot put a ton of stock into any one report because many times they are just flat out wrong. Many times they are revised significantly downward later. Many times they're incomplete with the data. Some of that may be true with this, but even if those things are true, it carries some psychological weight that sort of transcends the particular report itself. So let me tell you what I'm talking about here this morning. President Trump is getting what you might call a lag time trap. Today's PPI report came out today showing that month over month, so this is the January data compared to the February data, up 0.7%, 0.7%. You might say, well, what's the big deal? We're talking about less than 1%. Well, that is the 1 month jump in the price that manufacturers and wholesalers are paying for the products, raw materials, goods and services, blah, 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 that they get from the factories. And then they, in turn, either complete the process of making the product and sell it to the retail store, or the wholesaler sends the product to the retail store. So this is the price that the middleman is paying for the goods that they get from the factory. When it costs more at the factory to make a widget in March, you don't see that price at the Walmart store until May or June. And this jump of 0.7% is a leading indicator of what we figure to see down the line. Not always. We saw with the tariffs. The importers swallowed a good share of that, or some of it anyway, and cushioned the blow. Tariffs really did not become inflationary in 2025, which everybody was expecting was going to happen, but it didn't really happen that way. So we are currently, with these numbers, importing future inflation. Even if oil prices, which drive up a lot of these things, because remember, oil makes gas, gas makes the vehicle go, which brings the product from point A to point B that eventually gets to you. So if for no other reason, you're going to have inflation in the March numbers based on what's happening with oil. There's just no way to get around that. But those high production costs from March are already baked into summer retail prices, basically. So these things sort of push out a little further than you might normally think. I will also tell you that when you're looking at a 0.7% in 1 month, that is annualized about 8.4%. So if we get this kind of heat month after month for 12 months, we will have 1 year at 8.4%. That's about as bad as the Biden 9.1% back in 2022. Now, I'm dramatizing to make a point. We won't get that. We haven't seen any signs of that. It doesn't really make any sense. There's nothing massive that really happened in February. Some people are saying, well, gold and silver went up. I heard that this morning on Fox Business. Gold and silver has been going up like crazy already. I feel like this is an outlier report. But people will sit on this report because there's so much else going on with the economy right now. The Fed was basically, say, 2-3 months ago, looking for any excuse to cut rates. And I think that still has kind of been the hope, that people have been hoping for a couple of rate cuts. That brings prices down a half a percent, or loan interest rate down a half percent, which for a small business is lifeblood. Small businesses oftentimes scale up using leverage, using debt to do it. They manage that the best they can, but they have got a payment to make. And if they got to take out new financing or their current financing resets, which happens on some of the longer term loans out there, then you get an added expense that you didn't have before, and that is no bueno for most small businesses. A mortgage rates, we talked about this yesterday, creeping back over 6% towards 6.5%. You've got the housing lock-in effect. That continues as well. So all this negates a good share of what President Trump is pounding the table on with his affordability message. He's talking about how gas prices have been low, and he's right, and he deserves a tremendous amount of credit for all that. But the war has caused oil prices to go up, which makes gas prices go up, which causes everything else to go up. Tax refunds are landing now, and this is good. But if they are immediately eaten up by higher gas prices and higher credit card interest rates and higher student loans and car loans and so forth, the feel-good factor of that vanishes before we get to all the fun parades on July 4th. The president campaigned on Drill Baby Drill and has been very successful in doing it. Thank goodness for what he did. If we were at war now and oil prices were where they were under Joe Biden, your gas price, even in Fargo, probably is $4 a gallon, something like this. As I drive around town, I pay attention to gas prices, and you could find multiple gas stations a month ago where gas was $2.05. Today, as I was driving in, I came in on 45th from the south part of town, and I drive by probably four or five gas stations. I see a lot of 330s and 335s. So gas is up more than a dollar a gallon here in Fargo over the last month. Even if gas drops 50 cents in June and the president ends the war here sometime in the next month or whatever, the year-over-year inflation data for the summer will still be comparing war prices to pre-war prices. And the headlines are going to keep screaming inflation up, even if the trend's technically cooling. And you know what the Democrats and you know what big media will do with that. They will live on this. They will feast on this for months. July 4th is what a lot of people call the start of the psychological election cycle. And if we are still feeling squeezed as consumers by July 4th, the narrative of the Trump economy turnaround gets harder to sell to undecided voters and the suburban moms who are not following the PPI today. They just know when it starts to get close to election time, not just the moms, the dads, I mean everybody, the people just don't pay attention. They don't start really paying attention to this until maybe a few weeks leading up. What's it going to look like then? Normally that tax refund injection, they're saying like $3,800, I heard Maria Bartiromo say this morning. That is what's the average tax refund coming in. Normally that gives you a reason to go shopping. Buy something. But this year, that money is going to be more of a buffer for a lot of people rather than fun money, which feels like a loss. And that hits the accountability the affordability conversation that we've been talking about. It's really a math versus perception problem in my mind. The actual war might end very soon. I would guess that it will. But the economic ghost of $115 oil, which is where the Brent is at right now, is going to haunt this data for weeks to come. And we might be looking for a summer where the tax refund check just becomes a gas money check. And this is some sticky data that President Trump cannot simply control with a pen. My thoughts on that. More when we come back. All right, I promise you, by the end of the week, it's going to start feeling like golf season. That's what Dean says, and that guy's right. Way more than he's wrong. And you can tomorrow. It's not just the start of the big dance basketball tournament. It is the start of golf season. We are officially proclaiming it so because we are auctioning off a really cool driver and putter combo from PXG Golf, and that's the Cadillac brand in golf clubs. The bidding starts at $200 on am1100theflag.com. Click on the big deals link. And this is a package that is valued at $1,000. Custom fit to your swing, this putter and driver. And the bidding starts tomorrow at 7 a.m. Find out more online at the Big Deals page on our site, am1100theflag.com. Com. Nothing's going to get you more excited to get out on the links than a new driver and a new putter in the bag. And if you can get it, that kind of a savings, come on now. Why would you not? All right, 33 past the hour, and we are pleased to be joined on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line this morning by our outdoors. I'll call him our outdoors editor here at the radio group, Steve Carney. You hear him on with Kevin and Alex. You hear him on WDAY radio as well. Once a week, and I texted him last night. I said, Steve, I need you, big guy. We got to talk about this firearm insurance bill hearing that's coming up today down in St. Paul. He's been kind enough to join us here. Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing great. Great to hear your voice, Steve.
Right back at you, my friend. Always great to talk outdoors with you. It's not often that the political world collides with our hunting and fishing, but it is today, and there is a hearing going on down in St. Paul today on House Bill 3938, and I'm going to give just a quick overview, Steve, and then you tell me what it means and if our hunters and sportsmen and women need to be scared about this as it seems like maybe they should be. This is a part of Governor Walz's gun violence prevention package. That's what they're calling it. And one of the clauses is that it would mandate every firearm owner in Minnesota to carry $100,000 or more in liability insurance. And if you can't prove that you have this coverage, you can face criminal penalties, fines, and potential misdemeanor charges. Steve, what do we need to know here?
Oh, this is so absurd. You know, Steve, this is sort of a feel-good thing, I think, that Walz is throwing out there to make it look like he's actually involved in trying to curb gun violence, and he's throwing out a bone to the masses like he's working on it, but I think it's impotent. It's not going anywhere, and, you know, there were some bills, I think, put in recently about extended magazines and semi-automatic stuff that did not make it through committee. So, you know, the politicians really don't want to touch this stuff because it's political suicide to get into this gun thing. And I don't think it's going to go anywhere. And I'll tell you, liability insurance is really expensive. I've got it on my guiding, and it goes up every year, and it's just astronomical. And to have somebody go out and get a policy like that is really going to be expensive. And if you've got like a handgun and that's all you own, or a couple shotguns, it's ridiculous. You could have a $400, $500, $600 premium, and it's intrusion. It's really government intrusion into our lives, which we really don't need. And if you remember, we went through this back in 95 when we had the ban on semi-automatic rifles and capacities on magazines. That went 10 years. It accomplished absolutely nothing. So I don't think that'll ever happen again because we've already been through it.
Mm.
But I think it's an impotent thing that is not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, I have to imagine, Steve, that this bill plays very different in the metro area than it does in places like where you and I live. Yes?
Yeah. There's different, you know, ways to look at it, you know, urban versus, you know, outstate. And, you know, I understand that, but I don't know. I just think he's grasping at straws here and just, you know, trying to throw something out there to appease everybody. And it's just absurd when I hear stuff like this. And, you know, we need to enforce the laws that we already have on the books. You know, some of these people that are convicted of gun violence get a slap on the hand, off they go, and they do it again. And we need to enforce what we got. We're already, between you and me, so overregulated in so many ways in the outdoors the way it is, that, you know, I just hate to see more stuff piled on top of what we already have to deal with. But I don't know, this gun thing, again, most of this stuff never even makes it through committee because, you know, the politicians are just, I don't know if I want to touch that because, yeah, you know, the constituents get really upset, you know, when the government wants to intrude, you know, on your guns. It's just not right.
If you want to learn more about this particular bill, you can go to sportsmansalliance.org, which is where I saw it, sportsmansalliance.org. And they do a great job keeping track of things like this. Steve, this to me feels like, I know that it's going to line up with Republicans and Democrats on different sides for the most part. You'll probably have a few Democrats that will actually cross the line and sit with the Republicans on this one, but This to me doesn't, it doesn't feel like something that should be a political issue about, you know, a sportsman and being able to enjoy the great outdoors and taking your hunting rifle out with your kids and your grandkids. But I feel like if this goes through, it's going to make outdoor sports so expensive and maybe even risky legally that the kids coming up in that next generation who are struggling to make ends meet, we're gonna lose more in that next generation of outdoorsmen and women who just can't afford to participate in this anymore.
I agree. It's you know, it's going to hamper, you know, the outdoors for sure. I don't know. I don't think it's really going to go anywhere. I really don't. And, you know, I think we have, I'm just assuming this, you know, we all have homeowners policies with liability, and I would think we'd be covered, you know, under our homeowners insurance for, you know, firearm related things. I'm pretty sure that's right. I don't know what the amount is or whatever, but it's just another, you know, nail in the coffin, as they say, for gun owners that, you know, it's not going in the right direction. But I really feel that, you know, people are going to be getting a hold of their legislators and they're going to be emailing them and calling them and, you know, getting very active on something like this and try to shut it down. So I believe this isn't going to go anywhere, just like, you know, the bills that did not pass through committee a couple of months ago. So, you know, it's a red flag that we all have to, you know, be aware of, but it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Really is.
If you go to sportsmansalliance.org, they have kind of their three main points on this. They say the reason that this bill matters and the fight against it matters is that it's a calculated attempt to make firearm ownership a legal minefield for responsible hunters and shooters. Number one, it outsources your rights by forcing you to obtain a permission slip from a private insurance company just to exercise a constitutional right. Second, it criminalizes the responsible people, which we talk about all the time with gun bills, that the mandate is not going to do anything to deter criminals who are, they're not going to go and get their liability coverage, for God's sake. So we understand that. And then the third point they make is that this is one piece of a radical package, including ammo taxes and storage mandates designed to dismantle our traditions by making ownership legally and administratively exhausting. Steve, what do you want to add to that commentary there?
Well, you know, Steve, there was some talk, you know, a couple of months ago about having law enforcement come inside your house and inspect your gun situation to make sure everything was put away safe. That is even more ridiculous, and that, you know, faded away. I mean, can you imagine having, you know, the sheriff come in your house and check and make sure everything is copacetic?
Oh,
I mean, come
yeah,
on.
Right.
But everybody I know, you know, that are gun owners are, you know, very responsible, have gun safes, things are put away safely. And I would say 99.5% of the people out there are responsible. But like you say, the criminals, it doesn't mean anything. They'll do what they do. And, you know, regulation doesn't mean anything to them. And I think it's wrong to punish lawful people like us that are doing it right. You know, they're talking about putting serial numbers on every bullet and, you know, registering yep. your ammunition and all this goofy stuff that is not ever going to happen, but they're talking about it. It just doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the concerning part anytime, and the article that I was just reading about talked about it, that, you know, this is just something that is trying to push the limits of something. And this happens in politics, and both sides do it. You'll have someone that just wants to push, let's put out something really, really far out that we would like to see happen. And we may not get that, but we might get half of that, and then that's a win. And we've seen that. And I would say, just as I look at how the liberal agenda, Steve, I'm not going to make you talk politics, but I believe that's what's happened in most of the last 20 years politically, is that those on the left have said, okay, this will never get through, but at least we'll bring up the conversation and the wave will get a little further up on the shore every time we bring it up. So I think this is where I hear gun owners and sportsmen saying, no, I sometimes on some things I'm willing to make some concessions. On this one, I'm going to hold the line. I'm going to fight for every inch I can get because I don't want to lose any part of our rights or our constitutionally granted abilities.
Yeah, you know, I think what's probably going to happen, Steve, is they're going to come up with a tax on all ammunition, and that probably has a chance of happening, and that's going to raise the price even worse than it is. If you've noticed, ammunition in the last 2-3 years is crazy. And, you know, a lot of these rounds are $1 a piece, and if they, you know, throw tax on top of the tax they already have, you won't be able to afford to go to the range. And I think that probably is going to happen, but we already get taxed on it. So, you know, they tack on another 10% or 15%. You know, that's going to be an expensive box of shells when you're duck hunting in the fall.
Yeah.
It's already $20 a box, so it could be 30. It could be 28. And, you know, we can barely afford it as it is, and we don't need another tax, please.
In the great state of Minnesota. Yeah, well, they, again, editorial comment here, they got to pay for all their ideas somehow, and all the services and all the programs that they've put in, it's got to be paid for some way, somehow. It'll be said, you know, we're going to take some of this money, we're going to apply it to, you know, programs to help reduce mass shootings and things like that. And that'll never really happen. It's just kind of the way it is. Steve, I appreciate you taking a few minutes to help me talk this through this morning. I knew that you'd have some opinions and some good perspective on this one. So thanks for doing it.
Hey, my pleasure, Steve. You take care.
Appreciate you. Yep, you do the same. All right. We know more about why Freedom Elementary in West Fargo was closed yesterday. Got an official statement from West Fargo Schools. Sounds like they're back to school today, but what happened yesterday and why? I think this is good to know what the playbook is going forward. I want to welcome a new sponsor to the Steve Hallstrom Show. Thank you very much, Dan Perrine at James Patrick Real Estate. Now, I did not know that there was somebody in town here who is charging way less than almost everybody else. I mean, way less. Or that we have about 900 real estate agents locally, and most only close on a handful of homes a year. If you're selling, Dan Perrine at James Patrick Real Estate, that office is in the top 1% in the MLS for homes sold. Top 1%. That's pretty good. More deals, sharper prices, tougher negotiations, smoother closings, and no gimmicks. Just proven results, real commission savings. Call Dan, 701-540-3747, or visit jamespatrickrealestate.com. That's jamespatrickrealestate.com. Spelled just like it sounds, jamespatrickrealestate.com. All right, I want to talk a little bit today about what happened in West Fargo at Freedom Elementary yesterday. I have to admit that there's not a lot that surprises me anymore, because I've just lived enough to have seen a lot of things. But when I heard that there was a wave of flu going around in at Freedom Elementary in West Fargo, and that because of it they did not have enough faculty and staff to actually hold school, I said, whoa, I didn't know it was like that. I, knock on wood, people in my circle have not really been affected by whatever this latest thing is that's going around. I know there's always something going around, but apparently it's really bad over there. But I got a statement. Beth Sleddy, the superintendent in West Fargo, said, sorry, Steve, I normally would love to come on with you. I got too much going on at the times that we had available during the show today, 9 to 11. But they sent over a statement, and this is what I get from this. Per the negotiated agreement, so this kind of comes back to the teachers' union and labor agreements. I didn't know that came into it, but it makes sense. No more than 5% of teachers in a building may be on personal leave at any one time. This limit is in place because we know there will also be staff absent for other reasons like illness, emergencies, or bereavement. The limit helps ensure we can continue to provide a safe and supportive learning environment. Today, which this came to me yesterday, okay, which was the day that they closed, approximately 1/3 of Freedom Elementary staff is out due to illness. Woo! How many faculty and staff do you suppose they have at Freedom Elementary? I don't know. But a third of, is it maybe 100? Something like that? That means like 35 or 40 of the staff are out sick. Oh, my word. This far exceeds the typical threshold and significantly impacts our ability to secure substitute teachers maintain quality instruction, and ensure learner safety. Approximately half the staff members currently absent have been diagnosed with influenza. So this isn't just, I got a little runny nose here. We expect that number could rise as more individuals seek evaluation and care from healthcare providers. This is the first time outside of COVID that we've had to close a school due to illness. I keep landing on the first statement made there about 5% of the teachers in a building may be on personal leave at any one time, but this isn't Minnesota where they have that paid medical leave thing going on. So my guess is it's just a incidental note, not anything that really matters here. I don't know there's a lot of people on leave right now. I think they're just saying that it's just something else that's part of their policy. But the big one here is a third of the teachers and staff were out sick, and a majority of them had, half of them had influenza. And that stuff spreads, and I get it. I don't think that for a second there was something like, you know, sinister going on here, or we're trying to lie about something. I know there's a lot of that these days when things hit the news. But I've got to think it was a difficult thing for a lot of parents who had to figure out what to do with their kids for yesterday. Word is they are back in school today. I've not had that confirmed, but I think I would have heard about it by now had that not happened. So there you go on that. And Addison, you looked up for me a little bit earlier the item on GoFundMe for the fundraiser going on for Angela Lips. Where does that stand right now?
Yes, actually, since I gave you that total earlier, it's gone up another $200. They're now just $70 from $45,000.
Okay.
So they're at around $44,924 right now, out of a goal of $46,000 they have listed now.
Okay, well, then a few things have happened. The goal has been raised because it was $40,000 yesterday. So they bumped the goal up, I guess, right? I mean, shoot, if people are going to keep giving money, might as well take it. I don't know what the rules are for this thing, but it'll start getting a little suspicious at some point. One or two moves of the cheese, whatever. But they are over 40,000 now and almost at 45, and the new goal is 46. So people in the community, this is a good community, and they know they want to get involved when something just doesn't seem right. I would say again this, I'm still waiting to decide what I really make of this story, because there have been too many times when something has happened and later on you find out there was a lot more to the story than what you thought. I don't know. This one seems to me like we kind of know what there is to know. And if there was anything like any big smoking guns against this woman, I think they would have come out yesterday when Sheriff Johnner, Chief Zabolski, got into this. And the fact that she's hired attorneys makes me think that maybe we know everything there is to know. And people around here are saying we got to help this woman because what happened to her was not right. So I'm going to hang in there a little bit, but I think we're starting to get the whole story. Hour two of the program coming up next. I was not prepared for the emotions that I felt last night when I turned on the World Baseball Classic. It was actually after the game was done. I heard about how it finished up, and I was watching basketball, and I flipped it back over onto a Fox network and locally KVRR here in town, and I saw that Venezuela was celebrating. They were playing the U.S. in the World Baseball Championship game, the title game. And Venezuela had built a 2-0 lead. Bryce Harper in the eighth inning for the U.S. hit a 2-run bomb, and like literally every fan in that building was just going bananas for one team or another. And then in the top of the ninth, Eugenio Suarez, the third baseman on the team, got the game-winning hit. And it felt like about half and half, like half the people there were cheering for Venezuela, half the people were there cheering for the U.S. And with the political events, you know, basically we overthrew their dictator and seized control of their oil assets a month ago or whenever that was. It probably been longer ago than that now, but it feels like it was just not long ago. Boy, what a celebration for Venezuela. And Addison, if you give me host PC for a minute here, I loved the post-game comments last night from Suarez, And you can tell he's a man of faith. And he was talking about that as much as he was about baseball when interviewed after the game last night.
Can you describe what this means for your country?
I mean, what can I say about this? It's amazing. God is good. All the glory is for Lord Jesus. He was with us the whole time. We have to glorify, put his name in front of everything. And nobody believe in Venezuela, but now we win the championship today. And it's a celebration for all the Venezuelan country.
Your go-ahead double in the ninth inning. What were you thinking when you were standing on second base?
I just prayed at the time. Pointing to my family out there that was happy for me. God is good, man. God is good.
Eugenio, what made this team so special?
The union. We are together the whole time. We're not just teammates. We are family. This team is awesome. We are family here. That's why we play with passion, with love, because we feel that the jersey, we feel our country in front of us. That's why this is a lot for us as players, as a people, as a human being, and as a Venezuelan. Now we are the champion.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. Giving credit to the good Lord for the victory. And I look, I'm always going to cheer for the USA, but with all that country has been through, if we had to lose to somebody, I think the Venezuela team is the one you'd say, okay, I can live with this. They've got something with this World Baseball Classic. It's like, I mean, it was the level of emotion that you saw with the hockey in the Olympics. It was crazy, and people have really gotten behind this thing. And it's here to stay, and it's a lot of fun. I'm not a big baseball guy, but I love the drama of sport when you put the kind of the national pride of it. Super fun stuff there. So really good. All right, it is 10 past the hour. Let's sneak in a call from Dana quick before we get to the key three today. Dana, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, my friend Steve and everybody else. God is good. Yeah, he said it there.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to say, you know, that Timmy Walz there, he never gets enough of proving who he really works for, does he? Mm. And I'm saying this because I want anybody that doesn't understand to open up their eyes and see this. Whenever they say they're going to do something for us, it's to feed money to the corporate structure. It's the insurance companies that's in return and put a little money in his campaign fund. And the ball keeps rolling in his direction.
So you're saying this whole thing is kind of a ruse to get a little bit more money going to the insurance companies for your $100,000 bond for your firearm.
That's what's happening. Mm-hmm. That's the fact of it. And then the shells are getting more expensive if they put the serial number on them. Mm-hmm. And all these things are, we're going to protect you from the bad guys. Yeah, right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And then Angela Lipp. There's going to be a lawsuit. There's no doubt about that. And it seems she's got quite a bit of public support. And I don't think they'd have let her loose if there was something hiding in the wings, you know, on her. So instead of suing us when they sue the police department, let's go back to where she was falsely accused and falsely identified, the AI. Now, I'm not against AI. But if they're going to do this, then they got to be responsible for what they caused, too.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
take it out of the old administrative bonus.
Yeah, right. Thanks, Dana, for giving a call. Appreciate you weighing in today.
Thank you.
Yeah, good perspective as always there. I'll say this. I think AI gets overused. I mean, there's been facial recognition technology for years in law enforcement, and it's not, artificial intelligence is like where people will kind of interpret things and take a bunch of data and sort of figure out what to make of it. This to me feels like it's maybe more just typical stuff law enforcement has had rather than saying this is artificial intelligence. I don't know. The line is probably fairly thin there, but to me this feels like maybe just something that we've had for a while, maybe then kind of a new way of policing. But that's just a gut feel on my part, nothing more than that. All right, let's get to the key three. These are what I believe to be the three most consequential stories in the news cycle today. And the key three is something I try to do each day to find something that might not normally catch your attention, But I think it's really important. And it tells us something about who we are, talks about the world around us, how we live, play, work, shop, all that stuff. So I've got three stories here for you. Number one, a study done by the Journal of the American Medical Association, the JAMA. It's well respected on both sides politically. Sad we have to talk about that, but it's true. But a national survey was done recently. It's just been published in the JAMA. A survey of more than 7,000 U.S. adults suggesting that roughly 19.3 million Americans have seriously thought about shooting another person at some point in their lives. And about half of those people say they have thought those thoughts in just the past year. Okay, so there's 330 million people in the country, and about 20 of them have seriously thought about shooting somebody. And about 8.5 million of them have reported those thoughts in just the past year. So I don't know. If you take 9 million people, so maybe 10, that's like one out of every 33 people. So maybe one out of every 35 if you nuance the numbers, have actually thought in the last year about seriously shooting somebody. So next time you're in a group of 33 people, beware. There's somebody out there who might be thinking about offing you. The Oscars drew 17.9 million viewers on Sunday night, and that is story number two. And you might go, Hallstrom, why are you wasting time with this? Well, I'm going to tell you. This is a 9% decline from last year's telecast. Its first drop since 2021. The 17.9 million total followed similar drops for the Grammys and the Golden Globes. Huh. It appears as though maybe people are tired about being lectured about how horrible they are for supporting their president. Thought that was interesting. Definitely worthy of something in the key three here today. And finally, a new lawsuit has been filed by the United Midwest Legal Center that is alleging or charging that Jacob Fry, the mayor of Minneapolis, has failed to adequately staff Minneapolis police. As you know, they're supposed to have 1,300 cops, and they're down well under 1,000 there. And so a lawsuit now has been brought by the UMLC, and a new friend that I met when I was down in the Twin Cities not too long ago, her name is Rachel Paulos. Rachel's going to be on the show, I think, later this week. And I actually booked her to come on to talk about, is there going to ever be justice for Keith Ellison and Tim Walz? She's a criminal law attorney at UMLC. And then I saw, she texted me yesterday and said, hey, I don't know if you saw this, but we're suing City of Minneapolis and the mayor for not maintaining sufficient numbers of cops. And I'm like, fantastic. This is how it starts. This is how it starts, and I'm here for all of it. And those are what I believe to be the three most consequential stories in the news cycle today, the key three. When we come back, we've got a pastor from a church in Florida who had the best thing I heard all day, talking about young people, and they're coming back to church, or in many cases, coming to church for the first time. That's next. North Dakotans are some of the hardest working people you'll find anywhere, but right now, the steak is paid before your family does, taking a cut of your hard-earned money before you even see it. That's why Americans for Prosperity North Dakota is fighting to eliminate the state income tax entirely. It's time to put you back in control of every dollar you earn. No more letting the government take its cut first. You deserve the freedom to prioritize your family's future, not the state's budget. 9 other states have already eliminated their state income tax to attract jobs and families. It's time for North Dakota to do the same. Let's make North Dakota the clear choice for families and businesses by letting you actually keep what you earn. Visit AFPND.org. That's Americans for Prosperity, ND.org. AFPND.org to learn more and join the movement, AFPND.org. I should give you an update. I probably dropped a ball here by not doing this earlier in the show because I think we have, well, I don't want to say we all have, but I'm guessing most of us are very, very interested in what's happening in Senate chambers with the Save America Act. Yesterday, they got a key procedural vote passed, 51-48, to begin debate on the bill. Most Republicans voted in favor of it. Senator Lisa Murkowski voted against it and joined the Democrats in opposition. One senator was gone for some reason. It seems like you'd find a way to get there, maybe sick or something. I don't remember. But anyway, they had enough votes to get it to the floor and begin what is now a marathon debate that is underway. This is for the Save America Act. It's already passed the House. We can't forget that. So if the Senate can get it through, it goes to the president's desk, and he has made it his number one domestic policy priority. And it's become a huge debate between the Trump administration and Senate Democrats with the midterms coming up there. John Thune has signaled the floor will remain open for an extended period, possibly 10 days or more, allowing for late-night sessions and full-throated debate on this one. As it stands right now, they don't have the 60 votes they need to get it through, but there are ways you can do it with this talking filibuster that people have been talking about there, and Republicans think that they might have a shot at doing it, even though it still seems like a bit of a long shot. But at least we're going to get people on the record voting to say if they believe in it or not. And for people like Amy Klobuchar, who is the senator from Minnesota who wants to be governor, this will not look good with many people in the state of Minnesota. So we're going to put a lot of people on the record here. So we'll see what happens, but that's what's going on right now. We are in the middle of this big, and now there's like Mark Wayne Mullen is being, his confirmation hearing is going on right now too. So there's a lot going on right now in Washington, D.C., but that's where that is at right now. Okay. Best thing I heard all day. I try to keep this a show that where we talk mostly about news and information that everybody is going to appreciate. Not everybody appreciates when I get on my religious soapbox, for lack of a better way of saying it. But it's who I am, and I know many of you feel very strongly that in your Christian faith as well. And it's kind of a conversation that Charlie Kirk would have wanted us to have. And I do enjoy hearing these kind of conversations. And I want to play for you a segment that I heard from Broward County, Florida. And this was a pastor of a church down there. And there's been a lot of discussion about young people coming back to the church and, you know, being involved in faith-based activities there. And I think that this is really interesting, and I wanted to play this for you. And, of course, my computer just froze up on me here for a minute. Actually, my Twitter feed where I had the detail on this one saved is giving me grief here. So I'm going to do something really quick here, see if I can come up with this in about 5 seconds. And if we can do this, then we will. All of Twitter is being goofy right now, I think. So, okay. So this is a pastor, and I don't know his name, but he's from Florida, and he's talking about how there's a change in the wind when it comes to kids and going to church and getting back to their religious roots.
Say the young people that are getting saved, some of them are 20 years old, they have that void in their heart. But why do you think we're seeing this happen in our country?
The culture is starving for purpose.
Yep.
People are starving for meaning. People want so badly for their life to mean something, and they're asking hard questions.
Yeah.
And I think social media is making it even worse, because these 20-somethings are comparing themselves to things that they see online.
Yes.
And they feel like losers. They feel like they're not successful, but they're comparing themselves to something that's not real. Social media is not real. What you're seeing out there, it's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And they're asking these hard questions, and they're starting to come back to church. I think they're realizing that the modern day, you know, the digital age, you can talk to ChatGPT and it gives you all kinds of answers about what life is. But there are no good answers outside the church. There never have been. The church is where all the answers are.
Isn't that great? His name is Lucas Gomez, and he leads a church called Church by the Glades in Broward County, Florida. And in his words, it's Gen Z, it's the young people that is leading this faith shift. And that is encouraging to me. I'm glad to hear that. And I've heard that from a number of people, too. It just seems like something is happening with our young people right now. I've heard Kevin Flynn talk a lot about this on the Need to Know Morning Show, that it's a big deal. And he's seeing it in his own family and people he knows as well. So very cool. All right. Other things I saw yesterday and this morning that I thought were notable. It was on this day back in 2021, March 18th, 2021, so 5 years ago on this day, CNN broke the news, and I put news in air quotes for reasons which will be obvious to you in a moment, that the Pfizer vaccine was 100% effective in preventing infection and sickness in 12 to 15-year-olds. They had it figured out. They had it nailed down. This was a guarantee, ironclad lock, that if you get the Pfizer vaccine for the coronavirus, COVID-19, if you're between 12 and 15 years of age, 100% it will be effective in preventing infection and sickness. Remember, the virus stops with you, right, Rachel Maddow? How many parents decided to get their kids vaccinated based on that report, which now we know was a lie? It was 100% not true. And they sat there and they virtue signaled us and they sneered at us and they pointed their finger and they squinted their eyes and you're going to kill people with your virus and your freedom is impacting my ability to live. You remember how real it all felt right away? Not maybe real about everybody's dying, although there was a time when we didn't really know what to make of it. I was that way for the first few months. I'm like, okay. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know what? I don't know anybody who's dying of this. I don't even really know anybody who's sick. And we were made to feel like everybody was. And so came the masks, then came the vaccines, and we were told that you have to do this because we were sure that this was going to stop everything, and it stopped nothing. They forced us to undergo medical procedures, take drugs that we didn't want to take to keep our job or military status and everything. A lot of us said no. A lot of people who said yes wish they would have. All right, more after this on the Steve Alstrom Show. Vision Ford, Lincoln, and Wappanon is a place to go. If you are looking for a new car, truck, or SUV, or a really nice pre-owned one, and they make it very simple, they do all the paperwork electronically, and you're in and out of there in 15 minutes. As Ward Cater, the boss man down there, likes to say, it's not a goal. It's what they do. It's mandatory. That must happen. You are in and out in 15 minutes. Once you decide on that vehicle, you get the paperwork done right away and you're out the door enjoying that great set of wheels. They do a lot of things down there that other dealerships don't do. They'll come to you for an oil change, for instance, do it in the parking lot while you're out there working. They've got service drivers. If the car needs to get down to the shop in Wappanon, they'll send somebody up to get it and bring it down. There are a lot of really great things that are happening down at Vision Ford Lincoln. You can check them out online, drivewithvision.com. That's drivewithvision.com. We want to welcome to the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line right now, Dennis Neal. Dennis is a former anchor at CNBC, Fox Business Network, and has had several key editorial roles at the Wall Street Journal and Forbes, where he served as managing editor as well. He's got a new book coming out called Oregoners, talking about what's happening over in Oregon. And he joins me to talk about something that I saw earlier this week that I wanted to have some good conversation on, so we thank him for being with us here today. Dennis, how are you? Good to talk to you again.
I'm fantastic. It's a glorious day, and I'm so happy to talk to you, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Well, the pleasure is ours. So Florida has, in kind of the spirit of the Save America Act, I don't know, the Save Florida Act, I guess, they're doing a voter ID bill down in the Sunshine State there, requiring proof of citizenship. And I know you follow these things quite a bit, and I thought it'd be great to have you on to talk about a few things here. So let me ask you, first of all, what do you think that we can learn across the country about what Florida is doing with their voter ID bill?
Well, it's just, I'm so happy to see Florida taking the lead. DeSantis is more and more impressive. And, you know, I am actually the ideal guest for you on this, Steve, because 2 months ago, I left Brooklyn, New York. After 43 years, I moved down to Boca Raton, South Florida.
Good for
and
you.
I had to get my driver license, okay? And when I got it in Brooklyn months before, because I didn't realize I was going to be leaving maybe, it took 3.5 hours. And Florida, it took 15 minutes, but I had to produce to get a driver license, a birth certificate, or passport. Okay, I had to show two utility bills to my address. All this hard thing, and then at the last minute, boom, they let you register for vote, and I did, and suddenly switched my Democrat lifelong registration to Republican for the first time ever in my life. And so Florida is a perfect place for this to begin. Even as we see the Republican Senate be unable to get pushed forward on that Voter ID Act, and the Democrats are demagoguing it as voter suppression and repression, even though we have more black votes, more Latino votes in each new successive election than ever before. It's simply such misinformation.
Yeah, it sure seems that way. So, I mean, this bill that they're talking about down in Florida now is not just kind of the watered down. I know like John Fetterman now this morning came out and said, hey, if you just make this about showing ID, I'm in. But all this other stuff that you're talking about, citizenship, birth certificates, whatever, this is not what the people want. But they're doing this down in Florida, and it seems to be overwhelmingly popular. It passed the House 77-28 and passed the Senate like 27-12, I think the number was. And so I think the people of Florida, at least the elected representatives there, are saying this is not too much of an imposition on people. How do you feel about it?
I think it's entirely true. I was in line at a FedEx store across the street from me in Brooklyn before leaving. There was close to a dozen people in line in front of me, every single one a person of color, black or Latino or whatever else, Muslim. I was in a very Muslim neighborhood. And every single one of them had ID, and we had to show photo ID to be allowed to send a package by FedEx. The thought that that should not be allowed or be asked for when voting is simply so loopy. I can't even believe it's an issue. If the Democrats really are concerned about this, what they should say is, hey, we'll vote to pass this. We think only citizens should vote as well. We agree with you. Now let's add funding to this bill to make sure that anyone who doesn't have an ID and can't find it because they don't know how, we will get them an ID and we'll spend the hundreds of millions of dollars it will take to do this.
Is there any validity? I've heard this argument, and I'm kind of thinking it through because I don't like to react too quick on things, but I'm hearing people say, okay, Save America Act and what they're doing in Florida, it's requiring you don't have to have a passport, but if you don't have one, then you have to have a birth certificate, and you have to have a driver's license. And then if you had a name change, they talk about, well, how about women who have gotten married and changed their name? It's not what their birth certificate says, that you've got to provide then maybe a third document there. Is there any validity to these claims that you're making it too hard? Like, I get it, some form of ID, yes, but what they're talking about with the Save America Act and what they're doing in Florida, it's just too much to expect people to reasonably do?
I think it's a little infantilizing, actually, I got to tell you. The thought, you know, in my next book that's on Oregon and how messed up it is, that state has something. I read a stat the other day that claims something like 99% mail-in voting, which, of course, requires no ID at all. I just think that I used to, you know, believe that the Democrats were, you know, wanting to bring in illegal so that in 5-10 years they'll turn into citizens, okay, and then they can vote. But now I think that, no, they want them to come in. They want them to be able to vote. I don't understand the reason for opposing it. Also, if you're a Republican and you're a politician and you're trying to stop Democrats from voting, these requirements apply to everyone. How does that, you know, manage to stop only Democrats from voting? It's a blunt tool. They would do surgical strikes that are far better at making sure that that happens.
That's
that
a great point. Yeah, it's a great point. I agree with you. I was interested in your answer in that. I think that it's like you either believe in certain principles or you don't. And if you don't, and your principles are, well, anybody should be able to vote and everybody should be able to vote 10 times or if you're dead or whatever. If you don't think that certain things are important or you don't value them, your voting and your ideology reflects that. I happen to be one of those crazy people that believes that voting is something that is very special and it should be protected. And we need to value it. And when we don't value what your vote is and the selection of people that will change the future of your whatever, city commission or county board or president of the United States or whatever, then you don't care. Or if you have ulterior motives, then you don't care. But I think that some of these things are common sense ways to remind everybody how important and how valuable voting really is. And as long as it's not unfairly punishing somebody, to ask that folks have to respect that importance, I don't think is asking too much. How do you feel about that?
I think I absolutely agree, and always makes a conversation less interesting, doesn't it, when the two people both agree on everything. But I think you're nailing it. Just a couple of points to add to that. First, I remember when a few years ago it was stigma, taboo to be, quote, an election denier. How dare you? You're undermining the democracy.
Right.
You know, all of that. And yet today, I think it's less controversial because I think it's far more questionable. And many people agree with that now. And so it's no longer evil to do that. And the other thing is, you know, I keep also hearing the other side say, there is simply no evidence of widespread fraud in the election process. Yes, you're right. There isn't. And there doesn't have to be widespread fraud to nonetheless change the course of the elections. You only need a few thousand votes, or in some cases only a few hundred in six swing states. It doesn't have to be widespread at all.
Yeah. I want to.
Why not fix it by doing this?
Absolutely. Right. I mean, just because something doesn't happen with lots of regularity, this was a conversation about illegal immigration too. Like, well, you know, statistically, it's only 2% of illegals that commit crimes or whatever. And I say to myself, well, okay, so we're just going to accept that having some crime is okay when we could do something about the process that would allow it. Why don't we try to have as airtight of a process as we can? So I'm with you on that. I want to ask you about the state of Florida. And I saw something the other day, and I forget the numbers, but it was something to the effect of it costs X amount to do something in New York, and it costs like a tenth of that in Florida, getting some permit or license or something like that. And I just thought, gosh, you know, with as many people as have moved to Florida, which I believe is the freest state in the country, I really do, and we've got a pretty good one here in North Dakota, but it is amazing to me that still, relatively speaking, the state has a reasonable cost of living there. When you see all that you get for living in Florida, all the benefits you get from that, are you seeing some of that firsthand now that you've moved there?
Oh my gosh, I'm seeing it every single day. I in New York, I rented for 20 years after a bad divorce, and I gave up my apartment, right? And I just threw that money away, moved down here 2 months ago, bought a place for a fraction of what it would have cost. It would have been a $2 million place in New York, and it was, you know, more like a $400,000 place in Florida. It's already up 15% in value in a few months, according to the latest real estate online stuff. I went to get my hair cut, $120 in New York, $45 in South Florida. You know, everything's cheaper, and whatever earnings I'm able to bring in, there's a 15% raise involved because I now avoid New York City and New York State tax.
Yeah.
And of course, Commie Mamdani, the mayor I fled, is, you know, in there raising taxes just as much as he possibly can.
Yes. And in California now, I see another billionaire has left California. I know you've studied Oregon quite a bit, but in California, we're seeing the same kind of thing, that if you are adversarial to money, sooner or later, money's going to leave. We've seen it in Minnesota. We've seen it in New York. We're seeing it in California.
Oh, my gosh.
And people are going to Texas and California.
Hugely. I mean, reportedly, of $2 trillion in California held by billionaires that would be subject to a 5% one-time only. We promised tax. $1 trillion has fled the state because of the mere threat of that. In Oregon, as a matter of fact, they passed a preschool for all tax, and 310 of the 1,000 richest taxpayers in that county left after 3 years. You know, even not billionaires will flee high taxes. And let's remember something. As much as the Democrat Party is in favor of affordability, you want to be more affordable? Let Americans keep more of their own money. Cut taxes. Oregon is going off a cliff unless it does something to cut taxes.
That's right.
Losing thousands of jobs, thousands of people.
Yep.
It was once a great state to be, and now it is in crisis. It's education, eighth and fourth graders down at the bottom of the nation.
That's
even
right.
Even though its tax rates in yep. Portland are the second highest ever
yep.
in New York.
Right
state.
On. Dennis, I'm sorry we're up against a hard break, and thanks for your time. Great to visit with you. We'll do it again soon.
Gotcha. Take care.
Take care. Steve Ahlstrom show back after this. All right, I've been telling you about this great event we're having. Stacey Manning is coming in a week from Saturday night at Capstone Academy. And it is an event that we're bringing in because we want you to be equipped and soak up some knowledge from somebody who has difficult conversations with young people all the time and gives parents and grandparents advice for doing that same thing. If you want to get some tickets, you can go online to am1100theflag.com and click on the Stacey Manning button there, and that will bring you to the ticket place. But I also have two tickets that I can give away today for this event. We did this yesterday, and the phone lines lit up right away. Let's do caller number three. I know Addison's juggling a bunch of stuff, so you got to be hopping to it here. 701-271-1100. 701-271-1100. We'll take caller number three, Saturday, March 28th, Capstone Classical Academy, and this will get you in the door to hear Stacey Manning talking about how to raise a conservative kid in a woke city. That was the name of her book, and she'll give you some common sense advice for having age-appropriate conversations about those important topics that sometimes you just need a little advice on, you know, how do I say this now? How do I bring up this crazy subject? So a caller number three. At 701-271-1100. All right, if you are hungry right about now, I'm starting to get there. It's darn near lunchtime for yours truly. Well, I've got some specials for you. Well, actually, PetroServe USA does, but I'm going to tell you about them. We have our third caller, by the way, so if you're thinking about picking up the phone, we have caller number three already. But am1100theflag.com, tickets are just $25 for that, and you'll be glad you did, no doubt about that. But the PetroServe USA lunch specials today, Valley City and Harwood, you get the Swedish meatballs. At 12th Avenue, you get hot dogs and sauerkraut. At 205 NP, you get General Tso's chicken. West Main in Fargo, you get beef stew or Swedish meatballs. You get to pick there. Sweet and Sour Chicken on the 45th Street store. Castleton, you get chicken fried steak today. Glendon, cheesy beef potatoes. Man, that just sounds good. And you know it's good at PetroServe, right? Wahpeton, tater tot hot dish, and Cheyenne Avenue. Chicken pot pie. PetroServe USA, helping America fuel better. And the dangerous part about PetroServe is all the goodies they have inside. I have a sweet tooth, especially if I eat a hearty meal. I like got to have a little something. Finish that thing off. They got chocolate and caramels, and they've got the ice cream, and they've got everything over there. PetroServe USA. So yeah, you get a good lunch, but you also get some good dessert over there. Which, not saying I haven't made an entire meal out of some dessert before. I have done that. All of our phone calls on the program come to us courtesy of Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness. They've recently expanded and can get you in fast. They now offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment. Get in this week at valleychristian.co. Valleychristian.co. All right. From the email box, studio@flagfamily.com, emailer David said, Steve, earlier today you were talking about those great movies that when they come on, you just can't turn them off, even though you've seen them 100 times. For me, it's The Godfather. Oh, that's a good one, too. That is a good one, too. I was telling, if you're just joining us in the first hour, I was talking about, I'm a little sleepy today because I stayed up late watching Hoosiers. I was watching the late basketball game last night where Texas in a barn burner got by North Carolina State to get into the field of 64 and was doing a couple quick work things before I was getting ready to head to bed. And all of a sudden I look up, and on True TV where the game was, I see the movie Hoosiers starting. And it's one of those that when it's on, I cannot turn that darn thing off. But I set a timely. I said at 1:30 I'm going to go to bed. And I did. I've seen the end before. They went to state and won it. And but thank you, David, for sending that in. Godfather is definitely one of the classics, no doubt about that. Market check for you here. The Dow is now down 407 points after the PPI reading that came in today. And, it was a tough reading, up 0.7% in just 1 month. Now, that's not going to sustain. We know that. But, boy, I would love one of those that said flat or down 0.1%. We just can't seem to get those that are going to get the Federal Reserve off of their rear ends as far as rate cuts. And, I mean, with oil at $100-some a barrel now on the Brent price and with this number right now, I just don't think we're going to see any of that coming up anytime soon. And stocks are feeling it today. Stocks like it when we've got, you know, a good balance and it looks like things are friendly for the economy. And President Trump has got, I talked about this in the first hour. If you missed that, you can go back and listen to the show archive there. But President Trump has got this kind of lag time problem going on now where, like, the stuff that's happening now is going to take a while to settle down in economic numbers. So I don't love what I'm seeing here in a midterm year. And I don't know. The pressure is going to mount for President Trump to bring this war to an end. I just don't know how long he can hang on this. He's only, 3 weeks into it. He's got another 5 weeks before he has to kind of call off the dogs or have Congress get in the middle of it. But oil right now, $98.97. So this is the WTI price. So we're basically $100 oil. Gas prices, unfortunately, are going to continue to go up, and our inflation numbers are going to continue to go up. Things will get more expensive for a while. Almost no way to get around that. All right, my friend, stay tuned. Scott Hennin coming up next for the What's on Your Mind show. Have a great Wednesday. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Keep on flying that flag, my friend.